Hello, my name is Joe Austin. I'm a lawyer practicing here in Raleigh, and I'm with the firm of Naren Wenzel, PA. I'm offering this under the auspices of the North Carolina Reading Service. We call this the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title I, an audio crib sheet. And the basic material that I'm presenting, I compiled when I was with Ward and Smith, PA, also in Raleigh, and I present this material with their permission, kind authorization. The idea here is that as a practicing attorney and as a labor and employment lawyer, if someone gave me a quiz on the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title I, I'd panic. I would not be able to answer very many questions off the top of my head. And so what I have done through the years is compile information so that I would have access, ready access, to facts and statutes and regulations that have to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title I. And that is the area of the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA for short, that applies to the employment relationship, employers and employees. And so, in a nutshell, it prohibits employers from discriminating against employees and applicants for employment on the basis of disability. A lot of loaded phrases right there. And what I found was that as you work your way through the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title I, there are umpteen loaded phrases. And so I've tried to compile some information here so that we can work our way through this in a methodical kind of way and sort of unpack a lot of those words and phrases. So it is the Americans with Disabilities Act, so I think a very appropriate place to start is with the definition of disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA. And disability, the basic definition, is contained in 42 U.S.C. Section 12102 sub 1. Disability means, with respect to an individual, a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities of such individual, b, a record of such an impairment, or c, being regarded as having such an impairment. Right off the bat, we've got three subparts of what is disability and some loaded terms and phrases within each subpart. But it's basically someone who has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits that person in one or more major life activities. That's one aspect of the definition of disability. Then the second aspect or facet, and this is an alternative, is someone who has a record of such an impairment. And the third aspect of it is, or would be regarded as having such an impairment. So let's unpack some of those words and phrases. Record of a disability. What is a record of disability? A record of disability means that the person has a history of or has been misclassified as having a mental or physical impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities, even though the person does not currently have the disability. In other words, you had a disability at one time, you got over it, and now you are not disabled. But you have a record of disability. And the record of provision, and I put that in quotes, record of, refers to that is the second standard for determining disability under the ADA. And according to the legislative history of the ADA, this part of the definition of disability covers individuals with a history or who have been misclassified as having a mental or physical impairment that substantially limits a major life activity. One of the other facets of disability is being regarded as having a disability, and that's 42 U.S.C. section 12102 sub 3, and regarded as having an impairment refers to A, an individual who meets the requirements of being regarded as having such an impairment if the individual establishes that he or she has been subjected to an action prohibited under the ADA because of an actual or perceived physical or mental impairment, whether or not the impairment limits or is perceived to limit a major activity, but it does not apply to impairments that are transitory and minor. And a transitory impairment is an impairment with an actual or expected duration of 6 months or less. So if you went out and broke your leg, for example, and you got put in a cast, normally you good to go and recovered after, well, within 6 months. So that would not be a disability. We've got several loaded phrases that we've already gotten into. So one of those is physical or mental impairment. If you've got a manifest disability, for example, a person with a service animal who is visually impaired, or a person who is confined to a wheelchair, whether paraplegic or a quadriplegic, in those cases, the impairment is manifest. But that is not a limitation on what a physical or mental impairment is. So here's the definition of physical or mental impairment under the Code of Federal Regulations. This is 29 CFR section 1630.2 sub H. And a physical or mental impairment includes any physiological disorder or condition, cosmetic disfigurement or anatomical loss affecting one or more body systems, such as neurological, musculoskeletal, special sense organs, respiratory, including speech organs, cardiovascular, reproductive, digestive, genitourinary, immune, circulatory, hemic, and lymphatic, skin, and endocrine. So that's one subpart. Another subpart is any mental or psychological disorder, such as an intellectual disability, formerly termed mental retardation, organic brain syndrome, emotional or mental illness, and specific learning disability. So you can see that mental or physical impairment covers a lot of ground. Now, in order for that physical or mental impairment to be covered by the ADA, it's got to substantially limit the individual. So we go now to 42 U.S.C. section 12102 sub 4. And the term substantially limits shall be interpreted consistently with the findings and purposes of the ADA Amendments Act of 2008, which broadens the interpretation of the substantially limits, and C, an impairment that substantially limits one major life activity. And so there again, we have these cascading words and phrases. It's got to substantially limit. The major life activities are covered in 42 U.S.C. section 12102 sub 2. Major life activities, for purposes of paragraph 1, referring back to the definition of disability, which includes the element of substantially limits one or more major life activities. Major life activities include, but are not limited to, caring for oneself, performing manual tasks, seeing, hearing, eating, sleeping, walking, standing, lifting, bending, speaking, breathing, learning, reading, concentrating, thinking, communication, and working. Then the major bodily functions alluded to are, for purposes of paragraph one, a major life activity also includes the operation of a major bodily function, including but not limited to functions of the immune system, normal cell growth, digestive, bowel, bladder, neurological, brain, respiratory, circulatory, endocrine, and reproductive functions. So you can see right off the bat why a lawyer or a layperson or a judge could not be expected to remember all of this information, and why it's important to have what I call a crib sheet in front of you when you have to address all of these issues, whether it's in an actual case or just in trying to explain the ADA to someone. How do you assess all of these various issues in a particular person? I mean, disability, record of a disability, regarded as physical or mental impairment, substantially limits. Well, one guidance that is provided under the Code of Federal Regulations is an individualized assessment. And this is under 29 CFR section 1630.2J, Romanet 4. The determination of whether an impairment substantially limits a major activity requires an individualized assessment. It's got to be based on a reasonable medical judgment that relies on the most current medical knowledge, the best available objective evidence, as it has to do with an individual. And so it's a case-by-case assessment, and it has to do with each individual person and the limitations that they have. So we've gone through the law that puts somebody under the aegis of the ADA. Now, what are they protected from? Well, they're protected from discrimination in employment. This is Title I. What the law says is 42 U.S.C. Section 12112A, no covered employer shall discriminate against a qualified individual on the basis of a disability in regard to job application procedures, hiring, advancement or discharge of employees, employee compensation, job training, and other terms, conditions, and privileges of employment. Can't treat disabled people who are covered by the ADA differently from non-disabled people who are applicants or co-workers. We look back on the ground that we've just covered, and once again, a lot of loaded terms and phrases. What exactly is an individual with a disability? Well, didn't we just go over that? Well, it's not quite that simple. The ADA and the final regulations now refer to an individual with a disability and a qualified individual. And those are two separate terms. The qualified individual with a disability, we've covered a lot of ground there. We're still coming up with words and phrases that are loaded with meaning and are actually defined phrases. The ADA and the final regulations refer to two phrases that we've covered just now, quote, individual with a disability, and, quote, qualified individual, and they are two separate phrases. A qualified individual is an individual who, with or without reasonable accommodation, can perform the essential functions of the employment position that the individual holds or is applying for. We've covered some additional words and phrases that we're going to pick up on, but that is a qualified individual, and a qualified individual is one who is covered by the ADA, and it's this is 42 USC section 121118, and again, it's an individual who, with or without reasonable accommodation, remember that phrase, we're going to get back to that, who can perform the essential functions of the employment position that such individual holds or is applying for. So we've got two additional phrases that we're going to address later on in the podcast, but reasonable accommodation and essential functions of the employment. But that is a qualified individual, and they have to be able to do the essential functions of the job with or without reasonable accommodation. Break that down. What are essential functions? We look to 29 CFR section 1630.2 sub N sub 1 to define the fundamental job duties of the employment position. That's what the essential functions are. Job duties that are fundamental and essential functions of the job are not marginal, and a job function may be considered essential because the position exists to perform that function. There are a limited number of employees available among whom the performance of that job function can be distributed, or the function is highly specialized so that the incumbent in the position is hired for his or her expertise or ability to perform the particular function. What does that mean in the real world? Well, if you've got an iron worker, for example, who has to work from heights and maintain balance, then the ability to work at heights and to be balanced at heights that if you fell, you would severely injure yourself, that is an essential function of the job. So that if you've got if you're subject to dizzy spells, or if you have acrophobia, you know, the fear of heights, then you wouldn't be able to perform the essential functions of an iron worker. But and once again, the essential function determination is a factual determination that must be made on a case-by-case basis, considering all relevant evidence. Do you see a trend here that we're looking at the ADA cases on a case-by-case basis, that each case is going to be different, that it depends on what the abilities of the individual person are vis-a-vis the job functions. And under 29 CFR section 1630.2 sub N sub 2, evidence of whether a particular function is essential includes but is not limited to the employer's judgment as to which functions are essential. In other words, there's some deference is given to the employer to decide what the employer thinks is essential to the job. Has he prepared a written job description? Because the written job description that was prepared before advertising or interviewing candidates for the job should be a good indicator of what the essential functions are. This essential functions will be a function also of the amount of time spent on the job performing the function, and the consequences of not requiring the individual to perform the function. In other words, if he doesn't do that function, is he really doing the job? Then there are other factors that the regulations bring to bear. Those are relative factors, case-by-case factors, that indicate whether a job is an essential function. Here's a case that I hope will light things up for us and provide us with a good example. How about driving as an essential function of the job? Well, the Fourth Circuit has addressed that, and the Fourth Circuit is the federal court of appeals that has jurisdiction over North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, and Maryland. And the Fourth Circuit, in a case called Stevenson versus Pfizer, Inc., that is reported at 641 Fed Appendix 214, it's a 2016 case, addressed the question whether driving versus the ability to travel is an essential job function. And note the distinction between driving and the ability to travel. The plaintiff in the Stevenson case was a successful pharmaceutical sales representative for Pfizer who developed a visual impairment and lost the ability to drive herself to sales calls. And after she was out of work for a time, she tried to return to work. She asked Pfizer for several accommodations, including a driver to take her to sales meetings. And she also asked for magnifying software for a computer and magnifying tools to assist her in reading documents. Pfizer granted the request for computer software and reading tools, but they rejected the request for a driver. Pfizer took the position that driving an automobile was an essential function of the sales position and that hiring a driver would be inherently unreasonable. Keep in mind that if it takes two people to do the job, the one person who has the disability might be said not to be able to do the essential function of the job. So keep that in mind. If it requires hiring a separate person to, for all intents and purposes, do the job, the courts are not going to find that as a reasonable accommodation. But we'll get to that later. Pfizer adverted the plaintiff to other positions within the company that did not require travel, but she declined to pursue other positions, believing that her skills were best suited to sales representative job in which she had excelled, but they did require a great deal of travel. A trial court entered summary judgment for Pfizer. In other words, summary judgment is a way for the court to head off cases that the court doesn't believe there is a jury issue in. The case can be decided on the basis of just the facts and applying the law to the facts. So the question on appeal went to the Fourth Circuit, and the question was whether driving or, on the other hand, just having the ability to travel to appointments was the essential function of the job. The EEOC was involved in the case as well. In interpretive guidance, addressed this issue by suggesting that driving could be an essential function for a person whose job requires that he delivers, and they used an example, delivering water pipes, but not for the engineer who must inspect the pipes around the district. Driving would be incidental to the latter job, to get to the site where the individual engineer would use skills and expertise to evaluate the need for repairs, bring in other skilled workers, etc. Long and short of it is the Fourth Circuit vacated the summary judgment and remanded the case for trial, saying that it was an issue of fact as to whether driving the automobile was an essential function of this employee's position. Fourth Circuit said there's a trial issue. The jury needs to address this. Well, how did that come out? Well, they settled the case. So we don't know to this day what the Fourth Circuit thinks, but definitely it's a jury issue in under those facts.